the top of the 5 o'clock hour. Guillermo Mash on behalf of the Without a Roof radio program. And you are indeed listening to 90.1 FM, KZFR Chico, listener-supported community radio for the Sacramento Valley, the foothills, and beyond. Also, be aware that opinions voiced on this program do not necessarily represent the views or opinions of KZFR, its staff, board of directors, underwriters, or volunteers.
Give it away. So, tomorrow I got nothing.
I believe that everybody should be born poor 1 week of their life. 1 week.
As you see, I'm in a wheelchair. I was hit by a train 10 years ago, and a year ago I was hit by a truck.
There's a feeling in the pit of your stomach the first several nights that you're out there when you realize you actually are in a place where you got nowhere to go.
How do you like being at the shelter?
Kind of okay. Good, and I like it when we had our own bed, different, and when we get our new house, I'll be so happy when I have my own room.
This may surprise a lot of people, but in the last school year, all of our schools here in Butte County, there's 14 different school districts, identified about 900 students, children and youth who were in homeless situations during the course of the school year.
Welcome to the Without a Roof program, where we expose and remedy poverty, the worst form of violence. All right, Guillermo Mash for the June 14th Without a Roof radio program here on KZFR. Welcome. A couple of things to run down. I guess a good one is you want to find us. We're on social media. We're celebrating 5 years without a roof. Economic justice, giving a face and voice to homelessness while helping folks. Google us. Without a Roof, we come right to the top. Facebook, YouTube, Tumblr, we be out there. Today's a good show. All wrapped around crisis intervention training, and an event that's coming up, a community event coming up tomorrow called Mental Health and Community-Powered Solutions at First Christian Church, 6 to 9 p.m. Going to hear more about that from Lisa Currier right after this show rundown. And we also have real pleasure to talk to this gentleman, particularly since I can't go to the event tomorrow. I have an interview with Mike Summers, a well-recognized and well-versed Memphis model crisis intervention trainer who will be at this event tomorrow night. Going to have a lot of insights around crisis intervention training and working with folks experiencing mental illness and mental anguish. Also want to say, Point in Time has come out. It was a wonderful article penned by Ken Smith in this week's Chico News and Review. It's called Adding It All Up. I want to read the first paragraph of it and give some insights on some dates you can get involved with this important issue of helping folks that are experiencing poverty and homelessness here on the streets of Chico and the surrounds. Contrary to continued claims of those who believe Butte County homeless population is primarily made up of transients, majority of homeless individuals are local residents who wound up on the streets and have stayed there due to a lack of affordable housing. According to the results of the 2017 Homeless Point in Time Census and Survey Report, of the 1,983 people, say that again, 1,983 people experiencing homelessness who completed the survey, released May 25th, three-quarters have lived here at least 3 years and 36% for 20 or more years. Furthermore, 70% of the adults and unaccompanied youth surveyed reported they became homeless while living here. This coming June, it's next Tuesday, June 20th. That Point in Time is actually going to be presented to Chico City Council. Meetings begin at 6 p.m. in the City Council Chamber, 421 Main Street. This will be an opportunity to learn more about the report from the COC coordinator, Sharice Allen, and to hear public comments and some discussion around this very, very important topic. No further ado, we're going to lead on into the program here with Lisa Currier from Crisis Care Advocacy and Triage. And always remember, if you have a roof, be grateful. All right, welcoming Lisa Currier from Crisis Care Advocacy and Triage. Welcome to KZFR, Lisa Currier.
Hi, Bill. How you doing?
Great. Tell us about your event, this wonderful event you got, Community Powered Solutions for Mental Health, a workshop on crisis intervention training this Thursday, June 15th, 6 to 9 p.m. What's up with that?
You know what we're going to do, Bill, is I think that the community doesn't really understand what CIT means. And so when we're talking and we're throwing out these terms all over the place, I think what they need to understand is, what does CIT mean? What does it mean to the community? What can you learn about how to help your person who's suffering with some form of mental illness? whether it be out on the street or in your house or anything like that. We're going to have Mike Summers, who's a Memphis model CIT trainer for California police officers. He does Tehama County, Placer County, Yolo County. He just got 600 officers that he'd be training in Sacramento. And he's going to come and speak to us. What is the training exactly and what are our officers learning? In addition to Kathy Gurney, who's going to speak about the education that NAMI offers. So jointly with NAMI and Crisis Care Advocacy and Triage, we have the education piece and then we have the boots on the street. So together, we're educating people on what exactly can they do to help their family members, and we're actually advocating for those who are slipping through the gaps. So we're taking them to Social Security, we're helping them get their IDs, we're helping them get their food stamps or fill out their SSI paperwork, in addition to de-escalating crisis situations. A lot of times these situations do not need the police at all. They just need a little hand-holding, a little extra care, and then we talk to them and help them with what they're needing.
Why don't you just say real quick what NAMI stands for?
NAMI stands for the National Alliance of Mental Illness.
Any closing comments around mental health and community-powered solutions, a workshop, crisis intervention training, First Christian Church, 295 East Washington Ave, and that's 6 to 9 p.m. Thursday the 15th.
Yeah, so what I want to say is this is education for the community and the time for the community to voice the concerns of what's happening around the community as far as the mentally ill out on the street or in their houses or anything else. It's a grave, grave concern right now across the United States and in our nation, and we want to be able to enable these folks to come to the next level and get the help that they truly deserve and need as fellow human beings.
The Without a Roof radio program is made possible by generous contributions of KZFR supporters and by Chico Sports LTD, a locally owned sporting goods store featuring bicycles, sports equipment, and apparel for all seasons since 1985. Chico Sports LTD is located in the Safeway Plaza on Mangrove Avenue and is grateful for the support of local businesses and the community. All right, Guillermo Mash here for the June 14th Without a Roof radio program. And I'm really pleased to have Mike Summers. He is the Disability Response founder, certified Memphis CIT trainer with 30 years of law enforcement. And he's also a board member of Yolo County Mental Health. So welcome to the KCFR 90.1 FM, Mike Summers.
Hey, thank you very much. Appreciate you having me.
My pleasure. And obviously, just for folks that haven't heard the forward promos, Mike Summers is going to be at Mental Health and Community Powered Solutions, a community workshop and crisis intervention training Thursday. That's tomorrow at First Christian Church, 6 to 9 p.m. So maybe just a little bit more, if you have anything to add to your introduction about your background in crisis intervention training, Mike Summers.
Well, yeah, I'm a very happily retired policeman. I did almost 30 years as in law enforcement. I started up with the Santa Cruz County Sheriff's Department, did 10 years there, and moved back to the Sacramento area. I did a couple of years with the West Sacramento Police Department, helped get that agency going, and one of the first officers there. And then I was looking for a little bit more diversity in my career, so I went across the river and did 15 years at the Sacramento Police Department.
Wow, that's a wonderful backstory. And for folks that don't know, when you hear West Sacramento, that's Yolo County. You got to go across the river to get into Sacramento County.
Yeah, that's right. We just pop across the Gold Bridge there. But yeah, I did a variety of assignments at Sacramento PD and everything from, you know, patrol. I did 4 years on a mountain bicycle down on the mall in the Old Town Sacramento. And that was the second best job I ever had as a policeman. And then got into being a what they call a POP officer, problem-oriented policing officer. It was part of a special unit that worked midtown. And we worked on, you know, all sorts of law enforcement and social issue problems and stuff. And then one day I got tapped on the shoulder by a deputy chief and said, we got a pot of money from the state and Sacramento County, Stanislaus, L.A., and Sacramento County have a choice of applying this money however they want for, you know, homeless social issues and mentally ill. And he said, here in Sacramento, we're going to do an outreach team. And it was the first one that they ever had in this region. So for just over the next 3 years, you know, I wore a casual uniform, drove a white minivan, and all I did was work with a homeless mentally ill in the city of Sacramento.
CIT training, let's just jump right in. Crisis intervention training, what is it?
Well, CIT is, you know, it's not just a magic word. Basically, it's kind of a new philosophy that was started in the late 80s out of Memphis, Tennessee, and has grown. It's, you know, quite popular on the East Coast, you know, in the Midwest, and out here on the West Coast. We kind of think that we're the leading edge of new programs and stuff, but that's really not so much true. It's finally catching hold out here in California, but basically it's just a different kind of policing philosophy. For example, here in California, POST, which is Police Officer Standards and Training, mandates that in the police academy, which is nearly 1,000 hours, they only have 8 hours of training, and that's for all disabilities. That's developmental, mental health, disabilities training. So, you know, out of 1,000 hours, they only get, you know, 8 hours if they're lucky, and probably only six or a little bit less than that is actually on mental illness. So then you take a policeman and you throw him out in the field to handle calls for service. And with today's society, the way it is, and the, you know, failure of mental health system, a cop is actually about 50% of his job, of his daily workload has something to do with disabilities, someone with disabilities, whether it's someone who's, you know, a career alcoholic that has mental health issues that they, you know, they self-medicate, folks with a lot of, you know, mental illness using drugs, and then, you know, the chronically homeless folks. You know, my experience in that was probably, you know, 80% of all the folks that are chronically homeless have some kind of underlying mental illness. So, you know, they only get maybe 6 hours of training for something they do 50% of their daily workload. And so I kind of, after we talk about it, I just say, you know, what could possibly go wrong?
Yeah, just about everything could possibly go wrong. One quick question I have, especially I'm really interested in your background as a police officer. So a lot of folks like me that are out there on the streets and, you know, I'm 55, 57 years old, can remember back to the days when a lot of police officers walk the beat. Why isn't de-escalation like just the core of what the police do in general versus, you know, anyone they're going to quote unquote run into? I would think from a police officer's standpoint, you'd always be looking to de-escalate a situation.
Well, you know, it's really funny you mentioned that. We talk about this in the training program. Is, you know, you've got a different generation of law enforcement now. You have a lot of folks that are, you know, millennials, you know, coming in. They're not used to conflict. You know, probably the last time they were in any kind of a dispute was in the sandbox in the fourth grade. And, you know, we've lost the art of communication. You know, the art of just talking to people. I think that's one of the factors that has affected, you know, the outcomes. And the other, frankly, is, you know, most of the mental health systems have just failed. I mean, you know, as from a policeman's standpoint, if you could just get the service providers to do what they're supposed to do, not anything extra, you know, the law enforcement, I mean, when you have somebody who's in a crisis, you don't call a mental health worker, you don't call a paramedic, you don't call a fireman, you know, you call 911, and law enforcement is the only people that have to show up. They have to go. You know, and then you put them in this situation that by that time is, you know, maybe, you know, out of control. You know, I don't think people really appreciate that law enforcement, the cops, they have to go home each night too. You know, and if you have someone who's really in crisis, that's, you know, just their behavior is just off the hook, and God forbid they've armed themselves with a stick or a knife or whatever, just, you know, just bad things can happen. So, you know, I just think it's kind of generational. Plus, law enforcement is just so burdened with these calls for service. I think that sometimes, you know, de-escalation kind of takes a backseat.
Yeah, I don't think we talk enough about that. It could be a separate program, but, you know, compassion fatigue or secondary trauma is a big, big deal. It is a big, big deal. We just talked a little bit about what CIT training was. What isn't it? I mean, what isn't CIT training?
It's not a fix-all. It's not a Band-Aid. You don't go up and do the Jedi mind trick and everybody, you know, falls in line and does everything what the officer, you know, wants them to do. You know, it's just not a fix-all. But what it does do, and, you know, probably 90% of all the cases that law enforcement handles, I mean, you know, the only ones that really come to the attention of the media are the ones that go bad, the ones where it ends up in some kind of a critical incident, officer-involved shooting or, you know, an injury or something, and then, you know, the media is all over that. But they don't see the daily successes, you know, that law enforcement has, you know, with or without CIT, that, you know, that they, you know, they try and de-escalate folks and they work with them. And, you know, they may not go strictly by the CIT philosophy, but, you know, they've learned what works in their community and, you know, they use that. And I just think that sometimes we don't give enough credit for the daily, you know, successes that they have.
Well, I appreciate you giving some airtime to that, Mike Summers. Folks, just joining, we're speaking with Mike Summers, the Disability Response, who's going to be founder of Disability Response. He's going to be up here at a community meeting on Thursday the 15th at First Christian, 6 to 9 p.m. I want to shift a little bit, though. I mean, I did not hear about this, quote-unquote. I know of CIT. I've been through some level of CIT training, de-escalation training, but Memphis model, CIT training. I understand that's the model that you follow, Mike Summers, and if it's not, please let me know. But give us our listeners a little insight on what the Memphis model is.
Well, essentially, this model really started in the late 80s back in Memphis, where they had a number of incidents, and it culminated with one mental health consumer being shot by the police. And I think that the community just got, you know, they were just at their wits' end with frustration with the police, and they sat down with a guy by the name of Sam Cochran and with Memphis PD, and they said, okay, you know, how do we, you know, what's the issue? Why are these things happening? And what they did is develop a curriculum of training that really tries to give the officer, you know, what we call the Memphis model, really tries to sit down and explain to the officer, look, what are you really dealing with other than just someone's behavior, dealing with a mental illness? You know, so what we try and do in that model is we try and explain to him exactly, you know, what a mental illness is, you know, and it's an organic brain illness just like, you know, cancer or diabetes, and we talk to them about, you know, a little bit about how the brain works. We don't want to put them to sleep, but, you know, and then we talk about, you know, overall what mental illness is. We talk about mood disorders, thought disorders, you know, some anxiety disorders, and what some of these signs and symptoms are. So they kind of understand, you know, the background of it. Then we add in a bunch of other training. We talk about, you know, developmental disabilities, you know, autism spectrum disorder, seizure disorders, cerebral palsy, you know, intellectual disabilities. You know, a big component of the training right now is understanding veterans, you know, and their levels of PTSD that they have. So we have some folks come in and talk about, you know, what we call the combat to community for folks that, you know, you're taking these 19, 20, 21-year-old kids and putting them into, you know, putting them into warfare. And, you know, you train them in a program a certain way, and they learn to live that way. And then when they come home, you know, the things that, you know, keep them alive in combat can get them killed back here when they return to the world. So we spend a lot of time, you know, talking to them about, you know, how to better, you know, interact with veterans that have come back, and, you know, understanding their stressors and what they've gone through. We have, you know, I think a really big important part of it is we bring some family members in as well as mental health consumers and talk about their illnesses, what it's like for a parent, a mom, dad, brother, sister to have a seriously mentally ill relative that they care for. And, you know, I think we can do a lot of training, but I think until you actually have a family member that has a serious mental illness that you really don't get it. I mean, how absolutely chaotic it can be for the family. You know, and that's 24/7, 365. And they're dealing with it virtually every day. The sections that's most enjoyable for me is listening to consumers share their stories. You know, we've got a great group that I work with down here in Sacramento and in Yolo County. And, you know, they get up and tell their story and, you know, how mental illness has affected their lives, good and bad. You know, we get a lot of good questions from the officers about, you know, their daily lives and what it's like to have that illness. Geez, we go through a bunch of other training. We talk about, you know, elder care, elder suicide certainly is extremely high right now. The baby boomers are kind of one of the highest groups for suicide that's going right now. You know, we talk about some cases of excited delirium, this sudden death syndrome. So we've got a lot of different subjects. We just kind of want to immerse the officer in this for, you know, 40 hours. So when he goes out there and he encounters someone that maybe has a little bit of empathy, the main premise that we want to get is just, God, you just got to slow stuff down. You cannot be in a hurry. You have to slow things down, give folks time to process information, maybe for them to de-escalate a little bit, you know, lower their anxiety level, you know, and then just talk to people normally, you know, treat them as a person with an illness, not an illness.
You know, I got to give this real-time example with Lisa Currier from Crisis Care that's actually putting this on. Mike Summers, we were at the Jesus Center, and we were giving someone some space and some time dealing with mental illness that she had a whole bunch of stuff lying around that she needed to pick up. And someone from the facility came right up to the fence and just was, I'm not going to say screaming, but they weren't talking. So it was somewhere in the middle, very, very abrasive. She needs to go now. And it actually aggravated the situation, but she started to get really, really upset. But it really came down to giving her some space and allowing her to make some choices for herself. So it's very important.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the trouble is we, as officers, you know, we kind of get in a hurry. And, you know, because we have the authority and the badge and, you know, the state of California behind you, you know, you expect people to do what you ask them to do when you tell them to do that. Well, the trouble is folks, when they're in a crisis, they might be able to do it, but they might not be able to do it right then. So, you know, that's another big part of the training philosophy. And Lisa's great. She's an amazing. She's a driven person. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just if you just back off a little bit, give some folks a little bit of space, give them time to process what's going on. You talk calmly, firmly, and you can still get stuff done.
Yeah.
But,
mm-hmm.
you know, you give them some options. And it doesn't mean it's going to change the outcome. But, you know, if you treat people with a little bit of dignity, and, you know, you'll generally have a much better outcome.
It's amazing how when you do things in a respectful way and take your time and you give them choices, how often they make the right choice. That's what I've found in my experience of doing this. Maybe land on this one really quick, because we talk a lot about mental illness, but it's nearly impossible to run into someone or meet someone on the street that's experiencing homelessness that's not in, I'm calling it, situational mental anguish. So I think a lot of times we get caught up in a diagnosis, it's mental illness or this or that. But, you know, folks that are, you know, in a homeless situation, even a domestic violence situation, they're going to be in a mental anguish situation. And would not the same training techniques for that, for quote-unquote CIT training for mental illness, apply? Or is there
absolutely. Yeah. You know, I mean, in kind of a domestic violence situation, dealing with, you know, elders, dealing with infants or you know, kids, you know, or even just folks. I mean, you know, it's just about slowing stuff down and giving people a little bit of respect. You know, we try and use influence over power. And, you know, I talk to the officers who go to the training, and I says, you know, you're trying to use, you know, build some kind of a relationship with this person. You know, you're not going to take them home for lunch, you know, or ask them to come by and visit your house. If you just give them a little bit of decency and, you know, listen to what they have to say, listen to respond, okay, listen to their emotions and listen to what they have to say, you know, in any kind of situation, as you pointed out. I mean, it just has a much better success rate.
Let's talk a little bit about, land on this a little bit, because I talked with the police chief, Michael Bryan, on a prior show, and I talked with Giovanni Treseri around this 40 hours of de-escalation CIT training versus anything less. Why is 40 hours, why is your curriculum, Memphis model, so important to take 40 hours to do?
Well, I think that what we do is if we have a standard of training, and, you know, I'm very big on sticking to that. And, you know, the Memphis model, actually, it's far more than 40 hours. I mean, it's upwards of 50 or 60, you know, back there on the East Coast. They have a lot of agencies, and there's a lot of time spent embedding the officers in, like, locked mental health facilities, you know, taking them in there for tours and just, you know, exposing them to folks when they're not in, you know, in a call for service kind of situation. But, you know, I just think that, you know, we've got a good curriculum, you know, in Memphis based, you know, the 40 hours. That's kind of a number that they've set, where they've looked at all the educational, you know, categories that we have that we can train. And, you know, they just come up with, this is a good mix. This is, you know, you need this. You can do a little bit less, you know, but you're missing some important components of it. You know, one thing with the 40 hours is we spend about 4 hours just on de-escalation and training scenarios. You know, anything is better than nothing, but, you know, I just think if you all get on the same page and get the complete picture and the complete background, I think it just goes to serve the, you know, the officers and the people better.
California mandates, at least, so to say something's better than nothing, California's mandated just above nothing, 8 hours of CIT training for their field training officers, or FTOs. But both of those folks I talked to, Michael Bryan, public comment here on the radio, and Giovanni Treseri, the chair of the Police Advisory Board, had talked around, you know, we can't afford the time, we can't afford the money, we can't afford, you know, this additional above and beyond the state minimum 8 hours to 40 hours. I mean, what would be your response to that kind of outlook or comments around the Memphis model training?
Well, yeah, you know, we hear that a lot, and we're usually the ones that get called after they have a critical incident. What can you, I mean, what does a lawsuit brought against a city or a county cost you? You know, a lot more than 40 hours of training. So, I just think if you take that attitude, you know, it's you know, it's hard to justify that. You know, we can't afford this. Well, what can you, you know, we look at, you know, reducing officer injuries. And, you know, and I just think, you know, you have one lawsuit brought against a city or a county entity. How much does that cost you? And they're usually up above $1 million. So what does, you know, what's the return on that by saying, well, we can only afford, you know, 8 hours of training when you look at the cost of, you know, doing business? I hate to see, you know, administrators look at it that way.
It sent chills to me when I heard about Memphis training, because I've done some radio work around Desmond Phillips. It was so eerily similar to the impetus for Memphis model training of police respond to someone experiencing mental illness, and I'm pretty certain that's going to end up in a lawsuit. So you've probably heard about the Desmond Phillips shooting, but there's just a lot of pain and suffering in Chico right now around that, Mike Summers.
Well, yeah, I mean, I read a media report, and that's really all I know about it. But, you know, and I have to tell you, you know, like I said, you know, CIT is not a Jedi mind trick. It's not the magic, you know, carpet that makes everything go away. And, you know, policemen initially have to deal with behavior. And if you roll up on a scene and somebody that's armed with a, you know, with a deadly weapon, you know, it seems to be in the philosophy of this country right now that law enforcement, you know, it's your job to take a bullet. It's your job to get stabbed. As much as I want to, you know, I love this philosophy and I believe in it with all my heart, you know, I was a policeman and I know what it's like to be in those situations. Right. You know, and the millisecond decisions that are milliseconds you have to make decisions between life and death. And, you know, these cops, they have to go home at night as well. You know, I mean, that's the bottom line. And that's what we tell them in our training philosophy, right? The very first hour is, look, you're going to get 40 hours of this stuff. We hope you use it. You know, but it's not going to replace any kind of officer safety. And when you find yourself in a situation that involves deadly force, follow your office policy, and you have to go with what you feel. You know, and people just have a hard time understanding that. You know, they see too much television where they think that, you know, the cops can, you know, do some karate move and knock the knife out of their hand or shoot them in the hand. And, I mean, that's all Hollywood. Mm-hmm. It is, and folks like that have no idea what it's like to be involved in a critical incident when your life is at stake.
So what can folks expect? Because I know we've done a lot of talk around, you know, the breadth of the training, and obviously 6 to 9 p.m. is nowhere near 40 hours. But what can folks expect when they show up to this community meeting on Thursday, 6 to 9 p.m. at First Christian here in Chico? Mike Summers?
Well, you know what? I'm not quite sure what the format's going to be. I know that Lisa's got some things to say. Kathy Gurney, who's coming up from Butte County, or I think she lives in Chico. Kathy's wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
She's one of the folks that comes down and presents at our family panel. I know that, you know, I'll have a little bit of time. I'm going to talk a little bit about, you know, the Memphis philosophy and maybe do a little bit of, you know, some examples of de-escalation training. I want to talk a little bit how, you know, maybe we've got ourselves into the situation that we're in now. You know, and I think it just fields some questions from the audience. I think that'd be a, you know, great format. And, you know, I don't want to make it too serious. You know, we just need to, you know, have some honest discussion about it, and I'm willing to answer some questions and, you know, tell them what I think is kind of the best case scenario and what I believe would work. And, you know, we just have a good time interacting with folks.
Any closing comments, Mike Summers?
No, I'm looking forward to coming up to Chico, and my wife was a wildcat up at Chico State, so I might bring her along, and her cousin wants to come up and maybe sit in the audience and, you know, meet some of the folks up there.
All right, Mike Summers, thank you for joining KZFR 90.1 FM.
Great, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
All right, that about does it for the Without a Roof Radio program. I want to thank all of our guests, including Lisa Currier, Mike Summers, and once again, encourage anyone and everyone that's involved with this issue, wants to learn more about this issue of crisis intervention training, to get on out tomorrow evening, 6 to 9 p.m. at First Christian Church, 295 East Washington Avenue, Chico. Without a Roof, look us up, WOAROF.TUMBLR.com. Guillermo Mash here, host of the Without a Roof radio program, which kicks off a trifecta of KZFR Wednesday public affairs programming, airing from 5 to 5:30.
Each week we explore poverty, the worst form of violence, focusing on human beings without a roof. Thanks for listening, and if you have a roof, be grateful. Non-Human Radio, hosted by Jeannie Pizzino, talks all things animal rights, bringing you the latest news and interviews with local activists.
plus book, film, and restaurant reviews and deep discussions of the benefits of veganism.
For humans and non-humans alike, Wednesdays from 5:30 till 6 p.m. The Real Issue, hosted by Sue Hildebrand, digs into topics ranging from elections to environmental protection.
From social justice to economic justice, from the local to the global.
We cover the political part of everything. Wednesdays from 6 to 7 p.m.
Thanks for listening to...